Good morning, world. Welcome to Beijing Diary. This is the Sakai Report with a Ukraine update for Friday, May 20th, 2022. Now, I'm going to talk about a little bit about Ukraine, but first, I want to talk a little bit about that Twitter feud between Biden and Jeff Bezos, because Jeff Bezos is generally pretty quiet about politics. But he wrote the tweet, which I put on my Facebook feed, news feed the other day. Here's what it says. In fact, the administration tried hard to inject even more stimulus into an already overheated inflationary economy, and only Manchin saved them from themselves. Inflation is a regressive tax that most hurts the least affluent. Misdirection doesn't help the country. Now, this question about why he's doing this now, why he's bringing this up now, and anyway, it's interesting how they responded. he got a response from the White House, and the White House tweet, it was a response from Joe Biden himself. I think it was from Joe Biden's Twitter account. Anyway, it says, you want to bring down inflation? Let's make sure the wealthiest corporations pay their fair share. Tax the rich. You know, that's becoming the answer to every solution, answer to every problem, the solution to every problem. The storm warning, the tornado coming, tax the rich. Putin invades Ukraine, tax the rich. It's just the automatic answer to every problem. So to deal with inflation, tax the rich. AOC wrote for the cone, you know, they just said tax the rich. The problem with inflation is precisely because of that thinking. Spend money like a drunken sailor and tax the rich to pay for it. So Bezos came back with another tweet. He said the newly created disinformation board should review this tweet. Or maybe they need to form a new non-sequitur board instead. Raising corp tax is fine to discuss. Taming inflation is critical to discuss. Mushing them together is just misdirection. You know, the people on the left there in Congress, the I don't want to just say Democratic Party, because it's not necessarily just a Democrat-Republican thing. But they don't get economics. They just don't get economics. Can you imagine what would have happened if they'd pushed through the that huge spending plan they wanted to do, and you know, leave it to them to trash the one Democrat in Congress who has a modicum of business sense. So there is, I think he's right, there is a misdirection now. You know, the White House and others are kind of criticizing Bezos and saying this is because the employees want to form a union. Well, I don't know that that's necessarily a distraction. I think that could be why he's getting involved and speaking out on this. Why would the employees want a union? Because they can't live on what they're making. And it's partly because of inflation. So inflation does put pressure on, it does give impetus to people who want to form a union. So they may be right when they say that he's motivated by that issue. And as I've said, I'm not really a big fan of Jeff Bezos, but I do think he's absolutely right on that question. So what is it that's really the foundation of an economy? Elon Musk did a really good little economics lecture. It's about 4 minutes long. I'll give you a link for it on the Podbean page. But you know, in the old days, and as I said, this is not just a Democrat and Republican thing. It was Richard Nixon that took America off the gold standard. And I think that was a mistake. I agree with Steve Forbes. I think that America should be on the gold standard. And they still have the gold in Fort Knox. But Nixon took them off the gold standard. So, you know, when I was a child, I grew up in Japan, post-war Japan. And I used to go to the pawn shop and I'd see these old 1 yen notes. And it said, you know, this is just a regular Japanese currency, Japanese bill, but it had one thing on it in English. It said the governor of Japan agrees to pay the bearer on demand 1 yen in silver. The government of Japan agrees to pay the bearer on demand 1 yen in silver. And it was signed General Douglas MacArthur. That was during the occupation. I remember Aoyama-san told me one time that his monthly salary was 1 yen. Well, when I was a child, the exchange rate was 360 yen to a dollar. So 3.6 yen to a penny. That's what inflation, superinflation, does to an economy. And MacArthur stabilized it by backing it up with silver. The United States dollar used to be backed up with gold. So let me give you a real crude analogy, okay? And I mean, if I can explain this, it's going to be simple. So don't worry about it. I am not an economist, okay? We've had one president in my lifetime. I was born when Ike was in office. I was born in 1954, and he was elected in 1952. And so I've kind of followed, of course, Eisenhower. I was a small child, but I've pretty much followed every president since that. We've had one president who was a trained economist, and that was Ronald Reagan. When he went to Eureka Christian College, he signed up to be in every play they had, but his major was not drama. His major was economics. He had an economic mind. But most presidents do not. Now, Trump, and some people wonder why Republicans like him, because he is more conservative than any other president since Ronald Reagan. He's not really an economist, but he is a businessman. He has business sense. But let me give you a very, very simple analogy, okay? Let's say you've got a small country. We'll call it Country X. And a very small economy and very small money supply. We'll say 10 million $1 bills. That's their economy. And each one of those $1 bills is backed up with a little tiny bar of gold stored in a government vault. $1, one bar of gold. And the dollar says the same thing that MacArthur's 1 yen bill said during the occupation. The government of X agrees to pay the bearer on demand $1 in gold. So you go to the store to buy bread, and the bread is really cheap in this country, only $1. And this storekeeper says, okay, you want the loaf of bread, that'll be one bar of gold. Well, of course, you don't have to give him a bar of gold. You give him the dollar, because the dollar represents one bar of gold. And he's happy to take the dollar, because it says right on there, just like MacArthur's 1 yen bill, the government of X agrees to pay the bearer on demand $1 in gold. But then a Democrat gets elected, or someone like Nixon gets elected, or whatever, and they start spending money like there's no tomorrow, and, well, we're going to spend more money, we better print some. So they turn on the presses, and they print a bunch of dollars. And now they've got $20 million, and $30 million, and $40 million, and $50 million. Pretty soon they have $100 million. $100 million, but still $10 million bars of gold. So now, how many dollars are being backed up by that little bar of gold? Not $1, but $10. So you go to the store to buy a loaf of bread. What's the price of a loaf of bread? One bar of gold. You don't need to give them a bar of gold. You say, here's my dollar. Oh, no, 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 no. That little bar of gold is backing up $10 bills now. Now you got to give them 10 of those bills in order to get that same piece of bread that's worth one bar of gold. You see, that's inflation. You can't print money without expecting inflation. Now, when a government is, I believe Elon Musk is right about this, when a government spends lots and lots of money that they don't have, that they do not have, they are essentially doing the same thing as printing money. They're creating more dollars. And we don't talk about gold backing it up now. We talk about goods and services. You know, higher number of dollars for the same goods and services, that's inflation. It takes more of those pieces of paper to buy what you need. So, you know, this is the big problem that we're seeing in the mismanagement of the economy. And I heard several times, I know I heard Biden say it, and I think I heard Nancy Pelosi say it, oh, this isn't going to cost anything. This isn't going to cost anything. Why? We're going to tax the rich. It's just ridiculous, you know. And Joe Manchin got a lot of flack from Democrats because he put the kibosh on that foolishness. But something that isn't mentioned about Joe Manchin is that he's in a Democratic state that became Republican. West Virginia, it's a separate story in itself, but it's become very Republican. So he has that issue, but he's also a businessman. And Joe Manchin is a very successful businessman. He's actually more successful than most Republicans who complain about the economy not being business-oriented enough. Okay, well, we'll hit that subject again, but right now we're going to take a news break, and then we'll come back. Don't go away. We got lots more, so don't touch that dial. See you in a few minutes.
More than 300 million people in the world's poorest countries could soon be facing acute hunger. That's because the war in Ukraine is affecting the global food supply. Chuck Holton brings us this report from Egypt on what may happen to people who depend on Ukraine's wheat for survival.
Spring is in full bloom across Ukraine, and the winter wheat will soon be ready for harvest. The Russian invasion, however, has everyone focused on mere survival, and the fighting will likely ensure much of this wheat never gets harvested. And the wheat stored in these silos near Odessa can't make it to market because of Russia's blockade of ports on the Black Sea. That bodes poorly for many countries that rely on Ukrainian wheat for survival. In Lebanon, it's estimated the country will be out of grain in less than 2 months.
The impact of the Ukraine war on Lebanon is going to be unfortunately multifaceted, and we've seen that already, not only in the wheat supply that's coming into the country, but even calls to our hotline for families looking for extra support. Normally, UNICEF supports 130,000 children every month with a small cash grant of $40. And in recent weeks, the number of calls to our helpline has more than tripled as families have really struggled to put food on the table.
And in Egypt, more than 80% of the 270 million loaves of bread the country consumes each day are made with wheat from Russia and Ukraine. So here, people see big problems on the horizon. In Cairo, people on a fixed income are already feeling the pinch of high prices.
The bread in Egypt is like the backbone because most of the people need bread to eat. And the point is the price for the bread went up. Some here for the bakery doesn't make much more like before. He came to make less number of breads. So now if you have to get like 10 pieces, you got just 5. The bread came to be 30% more, which is like 65-70 piastres per piece, and then somewhere it can be £1 one piece.
Food security has always been extremely important here in the desert in Egypt. This granary beside me, some people believe, was built by Joseph from the Bible in the 7 fat years that Egypt had before the 7 lean years, where they stored up grain and then sold it to the entire world. And they believe that the money that they gained from all of that grain enabled them to build some of the biggest monuments in the world, including the Great Pyramid.
But today, Egypt is much less prepared for what looks to be lean years ahead. To counter this, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi has demanded the nation's farmers dedicate a portion of their land to growing wheat. Those who fail to produce their quota face fines and possible jail time. This Egyptian farmer says threats aren't necessary.
I'm happy to grow more wheat this year because the prices are much higher. I've already sold all my winter crop and it will give my family a good life.
Any added grain grown by local farmers, though, won't come close to making up the shortfall from Ukraine. For that reason, Egyptians are cutting back already and blaming Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, the flour also here get really more expensive because it's the crazy Russian government. He's a crazy.
From Cairo, I'm Chuck Holton for CBN News.
Yeah, see, you see the effects. We've been talking about the effects of what Putin is doing on Ukraine. And by the way, I say Putin, I keep saying Putin, Putin, Putin. As one Russian young lady was saying, he didn't do this by himself. He has people on his side, but he has a lot of people who aren't on his side also. So when I talk about what Putin's doing, you know, clearly in this conflict, I'm on Ukraine's side, okay? I think that's pretty obvious. But this is not a statement against the Russian people. No, would we say, well, most Russian people don't go along? Well, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if most Russian people support him or most Russian people are against him. But I know this, there's a lot of unrest in Russia about what he's doing. But it's good for us to look at what is the effect of his actions on other parts of the world also. And if you heard the other day, Ukraine produces 12% of the world's wheat. I don't know what the exact amount is, but it's a lot. And blocking the ports, you know, it just makes it impossible for that wheat to get out. It can be shipped out by land, but it takes a lot longer. But, you know, I've just been thinking about last night and the night before, I've been watching some documentaries on the War of 1812. Now, I'm not talking about the War of 1812 in the United States. Usually when Americans talk about the War of 1812, they're talking about the war with Britain. I'm talking about Napoleon's invasion of Russia. And I found a documentary series. It's in Russian. It's very good, though. It's in Russian. It's sort of a docudrama. It's in Russian, but you can, you know, click on the captioning there and get the subtitles. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's you can read it and get the gist of what's going on, and it's very well done. But the thing that occurs to me as I'm watching this is that, you know, Putin is Napoleon. And before I talked about how he's talking about denazification, but in fact he's doing to Ukraine what the Nazis were doing. And when I watch this series on Napoleon's invasion of Russia, Putin is Napoleon invading that country of Ukraine. And boy, if you study that war, that was an absolute disaster for Napoleon because of the frigid, bitterly cold winter. And the Ukraine conflict is turning out to be a disaster for Putin and for Putin's reputation. People wondered about him before, but he has removed all doubt. So they have surrendered, I guess, at the steel plant. And they, I saw the other day, the Red Cross was there registering them as prisoners of war. And there's some hope that maybe they'll be treated well because Ukraine has a lot of Russian prisoners. So they may be able to do some kind of exchange. But again, the effects of what Putin is doing, it's the law of unintended consequences. The intended consequences of a given course of action tend to be greater than and militate against the intended result. And now, he supposedly attacked Ukraine, you know, because they were going to join NATO. But now, Sweden and Finland are talking about joining NATO, and it looks like they're going to do it. So this is really not having the right... It's backfiring in a big way. Okay, what else is left? Well, there's the issue of the baby formula, but I think I want to hold off on that a little bit because I'm trying to sort through what how much of this is due to mismanagement, how much of it is due to the Abbott Laboratories closing down. You know, Biden isn't the laboratory closing down isn't his fault, but it just seems like they wait till a crisis blows up and then try to manage it. I don't know, but I'm going to hold off on that. But with regard to, I did hear about, you know, some people complaining that the babies, infants at the border are having plenty of formula, shipping formula to the border. You know, I am not endorsing Biden's immigration policy. I think it's mainly you know, because it's obviously set up to facilitate lawlessness. The idea is they're going to change the demographics by allowing all these illegal aliens in. So I'm not endorsing the policy, but you know, the precious little ones have to have food. And so, you know, I don't think we should begrudge them the formula. But this is really going to be interesting. It's not, and now we're hearing more and more people talk about, oh, that European baby formula is much better than what we have. So it's going to, in the long run, it's going to hurt Abbott Laboratories, I think, because they're going to have much more competition from abroad in the future. Okay, guys, so we've got to wrap it up here. But, you know, I think when I look at the situation today, you know, the Democrats blaming the Republicans and Republicans blame the Democrats. The Republicans are saying we're better than them, and the Democrats are saying we're better than them. And, you know, we all sort of forgotten God. I think of the scripture in 2 Corinthians says, but when they measure themselves by one another and compare themselves with one another, they are without understanding. They that compare themselves among themselves are not wise. We need to hold ourselves to God's standards. We compare ourselves with each other, but we've all forgotten God. Okay, guys, thanks for being with us, and we'll see you next time. This podcast is hosted online at beijingdiary.podbean.com. That's beijingdiary.podbean.com.